Good evening, or good morning, depending on when you're watching this, everybody. Welcome back to Hoops HD. This is the Hoops HD Report Sweet 16 edition. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood, joined by, over there, I got Matt Sikowski. Over there, I got David Griggs. And down below, we got the two guys that are going to be going head-to-head at the end of the evening tonight, our Xavier guy, our Arizona guy, John Slica and John Tytel. This is our Sweet 16 edition, though, and we had a fairly boring tournament so far, I think. Nothing exciting happened, did it? No buzzer beaters, no overtime games, so why even watch, right, David?
Right. Well, I mean, the games were B minus C plus, most of them. A couple of them were really exciting, but I don't know. Like, you're not buzzer beaters and overtimes are not the standard. I mean, I realized last year, I think there was a day where we saw – Xavier lose at the buzzer and Cincinnati miss a game-winning dunk at the buzzer. And what else? The in Northern Iowa meltdown that, you know, followed the Northern Iowa half-court shot 48 hours later. So last year was more exciting than normal, but this is what you kind of get in these early rounds sometimes. Just a lot of B-minus, C-plus games where some of your lower seeded teams or under the radar teams are competitive for a while, but they don't, no one actually pulled it off this year. This year's Sweet 16, no under the radar teams. And with the exception of Gonzaga, no one really outside the Power Five or Big East. So kind of,
there were a lot of eyeballs on the games. Cause I think from what I've read, These were the highest ratings for the second round games since 1993.
Yeah. In the first round, I heard the ratings for the first round were huge as well. Right, and, yeah, so lots of people watching.
But I'll tell you what, and John Tytel, let me throw this over to you. By not having tons of upsets, we end up with some amazing rounds, games, especially as we come up to these next couple of rounds here. You look in, for example, in you know, we've got the all top four. So we've got a region top four seeds with Carolina, Kentucky, UCLA, and Butler playing it all for one spot in the Final Four. You don't get that when you have upsets like we had in some of the other regions. So maybe there's a good reason not to have those many upsets in the early rounds.
No, there's not.
It's the trade-off. If you like seeing Cinderella, then this might not be the tourney for you. If you like seeing blue buds like Kentucky and UCLA go at it, I believe the stat I heard was most ever meeting with the most ever championships. I think 19 between the two programs. Like, that's the heavyweight battle that everybody wants to see. We got to see it earlier this season at Rupp in the win by UCLA. Round two should be just as great.
Right. Well, before we even get into the tournament, though, we're going to pull up the bracket here in a few moments and take a look at it. We want to do some outside of the tournament news here. We saw several big things come down in the past week in terms of coaches. And Matt, one of them was Indiana finally saying goodbye to Tom Crean after some rather tough years in terms of Indiana fans and their enjoyment of him.
Yeah, I mean, realistically, probably should have happened 2 years ago when you got the bad season 14, the very bad by Indiana's standard season in 15. Then you had the rebound last year, but once you get on the hot seat, you never totally get off of it. And as soon as you had another bad year, adios, and new coach in Indiana here, that will be a real good one to watch.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the more interesting jobs. We should probably know in a few weeks here. There's a couple names being mentioned, including a guy that is still coaching in the tournament right now.
Yeah.
But David, actually, though, it was kind of funny, though, Indiana getting rid of him. If they waited 2 more months until after July 1st, his buyout would have been $1 million. Instead, it was $4 million. That's how anxious they were to just get him out of the building.
Yeah, I think, well, again, who negotiated that? Gee whiz. You know, that's who I need negotiating deals for me. Like, you get rid of me earlier and pay me a lot more for not working. That's what I need to sign up for. But you notice, I can't help but speculate, and I realize this is generally speaking, and it is just speculation, but places like Illinois, LSU, who I know you're going to get to all of these, but a lot of schools have already hired coaches, and the coaches they've hired are no longer playing. And I realize that with Parker Sports and with how things work with this, there's a lot done behind the scenes. Is Indiana's coach, or the one that they're hoping to get anyways, or the one that they're expecting to get, one of the 16 that's still coaching?
But I think from what I'm reading, they want to make sure that they don't have a Steve Massiello screw up like South Florida did a couple years ago.
That's screw up.
A little embarrassing there, yeah, where they hired a guy that didn't quite have a degree that he said he had. But
I wasn't embarrassed. I thought it was hilarious.
The other, well, I guess there was a lot of big coaching news. The other biggest one, though, came out of both combination of Washington and Syracuse, Tytel, where Mike Hopkins, who had been named the coach in waiting for Syracuse after Boeheim is going to step down next year, takes the Washington job, and within hours, Boeheim announces an extension. I personally think they probably happened in reverse, that Hopkins took the job knowing Boeheim was getting that extension. But, you know, what about that?
It's surprising to me only because I had assumed for the past decade plus that Hopkins was the coach in waiting. He might have even been named that unofficially by the administration and or Boeheim.
I think it was officially named that, actually.
Yeah.
I have a coworker who's an alum. Actually, he's from Syracuse, but his friends like with Adrian Autry and has a bunch of inside scoops. So what he told me today is that he thinks, number one, it was in the order of Boeheim first making the extension and then Hopkins deciding to leave. Two, he thinks that money was a key factor in terms of Syracuse is known for not paying as much as other schools. I don't know if it's because of Boeheim or the area or the cost of living or the program or the what. But he thinks that he's going to get a lot more money by heading away from the land of Orange. And number three, just the chance to do something is going to be a little unsettling in terms of, my friend made it sound like he's really worried that if Hopkins can still recruit the same kind of kids that Syracuse is recruiting, either athletically, geographically, et cetera, that he could really be a threat to their success. So all that being said, I think it's a surprise. I know it's 3,000 miles away. I don't think he's going to go take some kid from like upstate New York and ship him out west to Seattle, but I'm just telling you what I've been told.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd agree with that third one about recruiting battles. I think that's the one thing that Syracuse does have on their side here is that he is so far away. But speaking about the money thing, the other one we saw, which was a bit of a surprise at first, was Brad Underwood leaving Oklahoma State, going to Illinois, taking that job at Illinois, and Stolica, though, what came out was that he was making about $1 million at Oklahoma State. I think it was $3 to $4 million at Illinois. And Oklahoma State just couldn't work out a new deal for him. Money grab, absolutely, here, my opinion.
I mean, it's a little surprising when you consider Oklahoma State as one of the biggest donors in the country in T. Boone Pickens. But yeah. I guess when you look at the money that Illinois had to offer, it was too good to pass up. And I guess he also saw the writing on the wall as to what he was going to be facing in the Big 12. You're always going to have Bill Self, it seems. You're going to have Bob Huggins at West Virginia for the foreseeable future. With the Big Ten being slightly down at the moment, I guess he has somewhat of a higher ceiling at Illinois than he would at Oklahoma State.
Well, Big Ten down or not down, we'll get that in a couple seconds here. I think that may be up for debate when we count the amount of teams they have left, David. But, David, any other coaching news that came out really surprised you? Some of the other news was Brian Gregory getting the job at South Florida. Kevin Keats taking the NC State job, among others.
Yeah, that was shocking. That, and let me tell you why. That is a great hire, and NC State made it. I am stunned. And the other one, Mizzou went in. I've always liked Quanzo Martin. I probably liked him more than the general populace does. I think Mizzou hired a really good coach. So good for them. I know he's from that area. He certainly got his work cut out for him. But I mean, if I'm giving out grades, I give both those hires A's, NC State and Missouri. And they haven't been getting a lot of A's in a lot of things, athletically, basketball-wise, or institutional-wise, in the case of Missouri lately.
Right. Obviously, we've got a lot of jobs that have opened up, a lot of jobs that are going to fill, and we're going to keep you up to date with that as we head into the next week and then into the off season as well. But let's go ahead and take a look at the actual tournament, the games that were actually being played as opposed to teams and their coaches for next year. I'm going to go ahead and pull it up on the screen here, and it should be coming up right now. There it is, I think. Yes, there it is, the NCAA Tournament Championship Bracket. And let's start off in the East region. And, Matt, let me start with you over here in the East, where we saw Wisconsin and Florida get through as one of our Sweet 16 matchups. And how about those Florida Gators and what they did to Virginia in the second round?
Oh, that's a very acceptable result, Sarah Joby. That result above that, I'd like to call alternative facts, but sad to see that, like, Nova had to go out early into those guys. Anyone else? Why could it couldn't have been say, hey, Michigan State and Izzo, whatever. And that had to be to the red medicine Madison.
Yeah, and that was a complete shock. And David, I'll tell you that people are yelling and screaming that the East region is completely blown up now because Villanova and Duke down there at the bottom with the loss to South Carolina, both gone. They were the two teams that everybody was picking out of this region. But you still got Baylor sitting there. And if I remember correctly, we had Baylor on our one seed line most of the season. Yeah. We thought if they'd won the Big 12 tournament, they could have even had a shot to be back up there. So it's not like everybody with a pulse is gone from this region, is it?
Not at all. I mean, Baylor certainly has a pulse. They are a protected seed. Now, granted, they're the only protected seed other than Florida that got through, but half the protected seeds got through. I mean, come on. It wasn't completely blown up. I just misspoke. But, in the opening rounds, UNC Wilmington giving Virginia a pretty good game. I was actually half expecting them to win that and still think Wilmington was a bit underseeded when you consider – everybody from the 8 line down, minus maybe Wichita, I think Wilmington would have pounded. But I was amazed at how badly Florida beat Virginia. I mean, I haven't seen Florida play that well all year. I wasn't expecting that.
Not even during Kentucky? Well, the first Kentucky game?
That was the other time that I think they did play that good. That the home win over Kentucky, but that was before the injury. Full strength.
And it was at home. Now, they played a fantastic game. It just didn't make any sense.
Well, John T, Villanova going down in the second round. I don't know that anybody in the world thought this was going to happen. What happened here to the Wildcats? You have some Philly ties. Is this just the old Villanova that we saw every year but last year, just rearing its head again?
So, like, they've been pumping the stat about Coach K, and I'm not getting into the Duke game yet, that I think he's now the second coach ever to be a two-seed or higher and not make it into the Sweet 16, the other coach being Jay Wright, the implication being these guys have talent for days and just can't coach it up far enough in March. I disagree. I think they're both fantastic coaches. As far as Villanova, they ran into a good team. I know Wisconsin dropped like 5-7. Finish the regular season. I saw them with my own eyes in D.C. a couple weeks ago in the Big Ten tourney. They almost won it all. They were beating good teams by a ton. They got senior leadership with Hayes and Koenig and Showalter and Happ in the middle, who's like Kevin McHale incarnate with all the low post moves and everything. And he's finally hitting free throws. Even without Bo Ryan, they still got it done. Greg Gard is great. This is a team that, like, I see the path. I would be worried about Virginia. They're obviously gone. I think Florida's going to have their hands full. And Baylor's athletic, and I don't know if they'll beat South Carolina, but I see a path for an 8 seed to make the Final Four, and that is the 8 seed.
Right. Interesting note here. Greg Gard, Mike White, Scott Drew, and Frank Martin, the four coaches there in the East, none of them have ever made a Final Four before, so we are going to have a first-timer in there out of these four teams. And Sleeka, you know I have to go to you about the South Carolina team. And no offense to your Xavier Musketeers, who we'll get to in a little while here. I think this is the Cinderella team of the tournament, despite them being a 7 and Xavier being an 11. How about that game yesterday?
I got to confess, I am shocked that South Carolina was able to win one game, much less two, when you consider that they had been kind of sliding towards the end of the year, and they were also 1-done in the SEC tournament. One of my initial thought was, how did South Carolina wind up on the 7 line and Wisconsin wind up down on the 8 line? I mean, they started slow against Marquette as well before they warmed up in the second half in that game, but they never panicked when they got down against Duke early, and the whole country saw why Sindarius Thornwell and not one of the UK guys was actually player of the year in the much more competitive than we thought SEC.
Yeah, and this, Matt, I'm sorry, David, go ahead.
Well, this was stunning just based on how well I thought Duke had played in the latter part of the season and how well they had played when they were at full strength. I think I'm as surprised by this as anything that we've seen. South Carolina, they were saying that this was their first ever Sweet 16, but I don't think that's true. I think they made it in the early 70s a couple times. research team?
I don't either way, it's been amazing. It would definitely be the first Sweet 16, at least since we went to seeding.
Right.
But yeah. Matt, why don't we take a little look ahead here in the East? We've got Baylor, South Carolina, Wisconsin, Florida. What do you like in these next in these games coming up this weekend and then in the championship game of the East as well?
Yeah, I like Florida over Wisconsin. Fairly close game, but I think Florida's athleticism is just going to be a little bit too much. And they're also a very disciplined and well-coached team under Mike White. So Florida, like a 68-63-ish type. I like Baylor fairly comfortably over South Carolina. I think now that once you get away from the South Carolina's home court here, just about get to a neutral, I think Baylor found their legs a little bit these first couple of rounds. I think they hold on there. Then I like Baylor to come out against Florida in the Elite Eight.
All right. So you're going with Baylor. Tytel kind of hinted that he thinks Wisconsin might be able to the team to get there. David, what do you think gets out of this region?
Well, it's just a really strong region, and I know the Big Ten appeared to be down during the season, and when you look at the success of Wisconsin and Purdue and Michigan, it's obvious that playing against 10 miles in Nebraska has made these teams infinitely stronger, and it's just, again, kind of a shame that Nebraska was not in the field. So how can you not go with Wisconsin with that in mind?
Stalika, do you want to go with somebody? I'm going to agree with Matt on Baylor. Do you want to break the tie, or you're going to go with a different team?
I think I'm going to go with one of the SEC teams, and I'll probably go with Gator Bait right here.
You think Gator Bait can not only beat Wisconsin, but then knock off Baylor also?
And or South Carolina. Or
South Carolina, okay. I just think that Baylor kind of had the bracket completely opened up for them here in the East, obviously, because they should have had to go through Duke and Villanova for the next two games, but I think that Scott Drew is good enough of a coach and he will get them through this next two
games. I mean, we also forget that they had kind of a rough first half against New Mexico State before they turned on the Jets in that one as well.
Yeah, you know what? I could point to probably 30 out of 32 first round winners that had rough starts in their games. That's not, you know, Baylor turned it on, and I think that they turned it on pretty good. And
well, I single out Baylor's because they had, early exits in the first round the past 2 years.
Yeah, but look at – I mean, it seems like Baylor either goes to the Elite Eight or they go out in the first round. I believe this would be, despite all the exits, their third Elite Eight under Scott Drew since 2009, if I got the year right. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's what they do. If they get past the first round, they're going to the Elite Eight.
Well, I'll tell you what, let's turn over to the Midwest region, which is also up on the screen there on the right-hand side. And, Tytel, let me ask you this. Of all the teams that I saw this weekend, I thought the one team that was most impressive out of anybody was this Kansas Jayhawks team. Would you agree with that?
Quick fact check. That's actually Scott Drew's would be his third Elite Eight since 2010.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
And also since 2009, though, so.
Yeah. I mean, I still stand, like, I'm still correct over here. I'd like to point that out.
Jack, can you repeat your Kansas question?
I said that I thought that they were the most impressive team that I saw play this past week out of anybody.
By scoring margin, yes. I don't know that beating a Michigan State team that's missing Aaron Harris and is starting a couple freshmen is that impressive, even though Michigan State destroyed Miami. Yeah, they look great, and I'm impressed that they can keep the off-the-court stuff off the court and out of their heads. I really still think that karma is going to bite them in the butt because they've had so many problems with suspensions and allegations and stuff, but the proof's in the pudding, so kudos to Coach Self and the whole team because they have been rolling so far.
Matt, how about this Purdue team? It kind of surprised me that they got past this Iowa State team that had been red hot heading into the tournament.
Yeah, that was impressive. That was basically a home game for Iowa State because they traveled well. You had Deontay Burton from Milwaukee coming home. Seems like he had a lot of his friends and family in the crowd. But no, they survived that, and they survived that huge second-half push of Iowa State that I think would have knocked most teams out. And in the past, it had stuff like that knocked Purdue out, but stayed strong, and I think that's you could play a key factor here when we talk about what happens a little bit later on, because I'm kind of liking this Purdue team.
Oh, well, let me ask you this right now, then. Let's just ask the question. Do you think Purdue can beat this Kansas team?
Now, can they? I think they will. Wow. I don't think Kansas has an answer for Caleb Swanigan.
Okay. Well, David, let me ask you about the Oregon Ducks down here. I don't think it was – I was not shocked at all about Rhode Island beating Creighton just because it was an undermanned Creighton team that really – suffered through injuries, and I think their Big East title run to the Big East title game was a bit of a fluke. But Oregon really struggled with Rhode Island, and you're still looking at an Oregon team without Chris Boucher. I mean, I think this is probably the luckiest team to be in there, that the bracket fell for them the right way.
Well, I mean, I think that's just it. They struggled against Rhode Island without Chris Boucher. They had Chris Boucher. They're probably, I don't think, I'll revert to Tytel, but like, I don't think that they're on the three line if they have him, and they probably maybe win another game or two in the Pac-12 tournament. So the fact that Rhode Island, who was also hot, I think they'd won 9 or 10 in a row coming into this game, was able to stay with them and even have a lead for most of it. The Rams almost won this one. It really wasn't that surprising. I don't see Oregon going any further, which is a shame, because with Boucher, I think they were a solid Final Four contender and maybe a contender to win it all. But based on how well Michigan has played since the start of the Big Ten tournament and even in the NCAA, I think this is as far as the Ducks go.
Well, Stalika, you said earlier that the Big Ten was in a down year. We've already discussed Wisconsin still playing. We've already discussed Purdue still playing. And we haven't even yet discussed the hottest team in the Big Ten, Michigan, off of the Big Ten tournament championship. A thrilling game against Oklahoma State, and then another real thriller against Louisville.
I mean, they're actually going to be one of three conferences that are going to have three teams in the Sweet 16, if you count the Pac-12 and the SEC. But I guess if you go back,
Big 12 and make it four, but, you know, who's counting?
But I guess if you go back to their regular season finale against Nebraska, Michigan has now won 7 straight games. And in some respects, I'm not surprised they were able to beat a team like Louisville, whose best wins all year seem to come at the Yum Center.
Well, the most impressive win in this whole thing was that win against Nebraska. I mean, that was just
all right. Well, David, I was going to ask you for some predictions, but I think I'll stick with Stalika because of that comment. John, do you think Michigan gets it done against Oregon and wins another one here? And then who do you think comes out of the Midwest entirely here?
I think it's going to feel like 1980 in some respects, where you have a couple of Big Ten teams playing for a right to go to the Final Four, but I think it's going to be the Purdue team that Matt mentioned earlier, where Purdue and Michigan face up in what will look like the Big Ten title game part two.
Matt, do you agree with him that that's going to be Michigan over Purdue or Purdue over Michigan? Sorry.
I agree. I actually think it's going to be Purdue, but I think it's actually going to be Purdue over Oregon. I do think Oregon gets one more here, but in the end, I think Caleb Swanigan, there's no one in this region that could stop him. And I think, therefore, that's going to carry Purdue to the Final Four.
Well, it's in Kansas City. This is.
I know that, you know, picking a 7-3 is kind of tough, but Tytel, you were at the Big Ten tournament. You follow the Pac-12 a lot. Do you think that this Oregon team can actually beat Michigan?
With Boucher, yes, and they can. But I think Michigan is really like becoming a team of destiny if they're not already, which I would argue they are by winning 4 games in 4 days. DC. I mean, their plane went off the runway. Like, there's a chance this entire team could be dead, which is a terrible thing to say, and thank God they're not. But just take a second to think about that 2 weeks ago and where they are today, beating Rick Pitino and getting to face an Oregon team without one of their best players and arguably their best big man, with apologies to Jordan Bell. Like, there's just something going on beyond here. It's not just that Derek Walton is playing like the best point guard in America. It's not that Beilein has won a gazillion games. Like, there's just something else. And I don't believe in superstition or magic or whatever, but like, something's happening with this team.
Well, so who do you think they come out of this region?
I like them over the Ducks. I still think that Kansas is for real. Like, if Kansas had been sneaking by, I'd be ready to push the upset button. But like you said, like, they went out and showed that they are the best team in the region. So I'll go with Rock Chalk.
I'm with you. I'm with the exact same title game here in the Midwest. I think Kansas does beat Michigan. But David,
Can I just ask a question to the panel? Like, for each region, what do you think has been the best game in the region so far? And my pick would be, I know it didn't come down to the wire, but I thought the Louisville-Michigan game was great in this one. And in the previous one, Yeah, I don't know.
I would have gone USC-SMU in that one, but
you really, I would have probably whiskey over Nova, even though it was kind of sloppy.
But David, did you ever pick in the Midwest also? And then I'll
Kansas.
Okay. Well, Matt, you got to answer David's question. What do you thought the best two games were in those in the East and the Midwest?
I think Midwest, it was definitely that Purdue Iowa State game. In the East, like, you know what? I'll go first. I'll go one of the first games of the tourney, Virginia-Wilmington.
Okay. Tytel, do you have an answer?
In the East, does it have to be a second-round game, a first-round
game? No, any game.
It was South Carolina-Duke. Like, I still can't believe that South Carolina won. It was like a heavyweight fight where they were the underdog against Goliath, and they were down, and then they got the lead, and it's hung around as Duke was – pressing and turning the ball over was just an amazing, amazing performance. As far as the Midwest, I think there have not been a lot of great games because there have been a lot of blowouts. I think Oregon holding on against Rhode Island, because I saw that, has an upset waiting to happen, and then the Ducks just, like, finally got over the hump, and it was Tyler Dorsey, not Dylan Brooks, getting it done at the end. Just an amazing effort by a team that I thought would be done by now because of the loss of Boucher.
Well, I'll tell you, Sleek, I can get your answer, but I should have thrown out there the East also. How about that Mount St. Mary's New Orleans play?
Yeah, I'm changing my vote to that just to emphasize that it can be any game.
But Stalika, your thoughts on David's question?
I would have taken the Purdue and Iowa State game simply because Purdue had the 17-point lead in that one, and instead of completely boat racing the Cyclones, Iowa State was able to come back, actually get a brief lead, but to their credit, Purdue never panicked.
How about the East? Did you have one?
I mean, it does pain me to say this, but I would have to take the Wisconsin over Villanova game, even if it's one that I suppose we shouldn't be surprised given Villanova's recent history.
Well, I'll tell you what here. Let me go ahead and let's scroll on down to the bottom here for a second. Let me ask a question here because the screen seems to have frozen up here.
Oh, for really God.
There we go. Okay. You know what? I'm not going to answer this question because I think I've got it back. But, well.
What was the question? No.
I'll ask the question anyhow. Then we'll scroll down.
We have not discussed
an ACC team yet, and there's only one left. And I'm now reading on Twitter and everywhere that this idea that, the ACC was completely overrated because it came up short in the tournament. David, do you agree with that? That, yes, ACC has an awful NCAA tournament so far, but is that the measure of a conference in your mind?
In your opinion, no. Yes. No, absolutely not. In a lot of people's minds, yes, and I understand that. I think that that's looking at things through a very limited scope. I'm not saying it should be discounted, or I'm not even saying that it shouldn't be heavily favored, but the ACC was not underrated because of what they did out of conference. Pure and simple, it was not underrated. Every team that got in belonged in. And the fact that they lost does not mean they didn't belong in.
Well, I've got the screen to scroll down now. We've got the South region up. And, Matt, let me start with you here in the South, where North Carolina not only rolled over Texas Southern, but then took care of Arkansas as well. The game that was even closer, that was actually a pretty good game. They are our only ACC team left. How good are they?
Very good. Still the favorite of this region, although, man, Butler and Marks is always a tough proposition, but still would give them the slight favorite, and they edged out there. Every team definitely has one of these games, and they edged it out against Arkansas. So I still think Carolina probably comes out of this region, but it's an open one, and I don't discount Butler.
Well, let me ask you about this Butler team. They got the benefit of Middle Tennessee's upset over Minnesota, although I think Middle Tennessee was a better team than Minnesota, but still took care of them, not easily, but it wasn't that close of a game either at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, they've been helped by playing a 13 and a 12, and so they should have won, but they did. And to do it by 12 points and 9 points, I mean, they were in blowouts, but to get it done is very impressive. I like Matt's point. Like, you pick against Butler and March at your own risk. Obviously, Brad Stevens is not coming through that door, and it's a tall order against the Tar Heels because they're so tall. Haha. But I like the fact that Butler's beaten Villanova twice this year, only because that tells me that they're capable of beating anyone and they're not going to be afraid of anyone. So I hope Carolina is not looking ahead to a Kentucky-UCLA battle because Butler's for real, but I still like the heels in that game.
You like the heels in that game. Okay. Salika, UCLA looked very – I mean, I said that Kansas was the most impressive team. I think UCLA may have been the second most impressive team so far. No offense to your Musketeers with what they did. We'll get there in a second. But how about what they did to Cincinnati? You must have enjoyed that.
Yep, I mean, even Mick Cronin was praising UCLA and their offense because I guess to his point, I guess he didn't seem to be too upset about it considering they were playing them in California. But I was also going to throw out a few fun facts as far as Butler goes. They are actually 10-0 is the higher seed in their conference tournament history. And the last two times they've beaten a one seed in the tournament, they have made it to the national title game. So if they beat Carolina, look out.
Look out, they're going to go to the title game, huh? Well, David, I've got to ask you this. You said all season that, you know, when you beat a team once, you've proven that you can beat them, and why should you have to beat them again in a conference tournament? So why should you still have to beat Kentucky again? They already beat them, right?
Oh, not in a conference tournament. I know that Stalika was rooting against UC because of the rivalry, but I will say this: Cincinnati and Kentucky do not play often. In fact, I think the only times they've played since the early 1980s has been in the NCAA tournament. They're 80 miles apart within that part of the country. It's a big deal when they do play. It would have been fun to see them play again just because it happens so rarely. But UCLA, against Cincinnati, I actually thought as good as their offense was, UCLA's defense wasn't terrible. It was actually rather effective when it needed to be. Looking at the Kentucky game, for starters, going a little bit under the radar here, I was actually really impressed with Northern Kentucky and how effectively they ran their offense against Kentucky. They actually created a lot of open looks, and they're a good shooting team. I don't know if it was nerves or just different sight lines than what they were used to, but they missed a lot of open shots, but they still were able to create them, and they were able to actually keep it within arm's reach. So Northern Kentucky, with four starters back and pretty much their entire bench, a team to keep an eye on next year. Wichita State just – I was expecting them to beat Kentucky and kept thinking they would until the horn went off, but they just couldn't get their offense going in that game.
Well, yeah, but Greg Marshall's wife had a really fun game.
I could have sworn I heard his wife in the background for somebody.
She got thrown out of the building, and she was rather intoxicated during the game, which is impressive.
Well, that's happened. That used to happen at Winthrop fairly frequently.
It was quite impressive because they don't even sell alcohol at these games, but she found a way anyhow. But that's a thing.
I didn't know that it happened until just now. That's amazing.
Let me turn to each of you. Tata, let me start with you. Who are your picks in this region? And also, what do you think the best game was in this region? Let me throw David's question out there also. And then, by the way, that was allegedly intoxicating.
Allegedly. Well, don't feel bad. I mean, I've been thrown out for being allegedly intoxicated myself. It's a bunch of nonsense.
So in the South region, I don't think UCLA can – their offense can get it done and Ball's playing great. I just don't trust their defense, even though they beat the Wildcats a few months ago. And as far as Carolina, Kentucky, just sit back and enjoy it. It's a coin flip. I'll go with Kentucky, but – it's a coin flip because they're both great. As far as best game, I would argue there have not been a lot of great games. If I have to pick one, I would say Wichita-Dayton only because it was a 7-10, but everybody was picking the 10. But they're two mid-majors with two great coaches, and they're all getting mentioned about Miller and Marshall, which school are they going to go to right after the game because they're going to be at the top of everyone's hiring list. And to see it go back and forth with these mid-major guys who could take on anyone in the country was just very exciting.
I'm actually going to go with that North Carolina-Arkansas game. I thought that was the best game in this region. I thought that was a really fun game. And I'm going to – while I originally picked Butler to come out of this region, considering how awful the rest of my bracket was, I'm going to amend it and say North Carolina comes out of this. But, David, your thoughts on those two questions?
I'm going with Butler just because why not? They've certainly proven that they can lift a lot of heavy weight. When you look at their whole body of work this season, I think they got it in them to get the win. I know I'm kind of going out on a limb there, but that's my pick. As far as the best game, I think I got to go Wichita, Kentucky, even though I was wanting a different outcome. Nothing against Kentucky. It's just that I wanted people to realize that Wichita State was a top 25 caliber team. I at least think they proved that, but I really wish they were still playing. It would have been fun to watch them go up against UCLA in that offense.
Matt.
Yeah, I would say for who I think comes out, I'll say North Carolina beats Kentucky. I think they get them in the rematch. I do think Kentucky does get UCLA this time. Best game, I'll have to still say Wichita, Kentucky. That I was looking forward to it. A little bit disappointed. I thought Wichita would run their offense a little better in this entire tournament in general, but that might be the one point for them to make a run next year. They got to execute a little bit better on offense.
All right, and Sleeka.
I mean, I'll stick with what I had picked last week, and I'll continue to ride UCLA as far as the winner in this region, because they had passed what I thought would be their toughest test against Cincinnati. But I think if we're talking about game of this region, I have to go with North Carolina over Arkansas, because had the Tar Heels not come back in that one, the ACC would have been completely shut out of the Sweet 16 for the first time, and who knows how long.
Probably the first time ever. Oh, we have to do research on that. But let's switch over to the West region. And David, let me start with you up top there with Gonzaga getting that win over Northwestern after Northwestern had a thriller against Vanderbilt, where both ways in both games, and Northwestern fans were rather irate afterwards. And I don't,
I don't blame them. Northwestern in their first ever tournament, even though they're out of it, and I know that it always sucks when it ends. Got the most out of this one. They won under rather bizarre circumstances against Vanderbilt, where the player was obviously not aware of the game situation. I think he thought Vandy was behind by one. In reality, they were up by one. Very ill-advised foul, and that enabled Northwestern, or at least played a big role in why they were able to win that game. They go into Gonzaga, and an obvious goaltend. I mean, just the referees blatantly missed it. It wasn't that it was on its way down. It's that his hand came up through the rim.
David, they missed the call, but does that excuse Chris Collins from running out there and acting like a moron and getting in the referee's face? I think that's what blew the game more than the bad call was the technical top of that.
No, it doesn't. It led to it. I don't want to say that it excuses it, but it did lead to it. They get that call right. Northwestern's within three.
But he still has to know the game situation.
Yes.
He can't do that, doesn't he?
Yeah, not disagreeing with that, because it wasn't within three, but it was within five, and you're still feeling pretty good about yourself. And then there's the technical foul, and it goes out to seven and then nine, I think, after that. The call did lead to it. Would you at least agree with that?
Yeah, I agree it led to it, but I also think that as a head coach, you cannot go running out. You know that running out of the middle of the court and yelling official while the game is going on.
Is it not the puppet that's been saying all year that a technical by a coach is in effect slapping his team in the face?
Absolutely,
it is. He kicked him. I mean, this was a kick in the balls.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. It definitely was. And I understand being upset, but in that situation, yeah, you can't just run out onto the court like that. And CBS, whoever that kid was, I've since heard it was the AD's son. That was ridiculous. Why did they need to keep showing that?
It was fantastic.
It was ridiculous.
Matt, West Virginia is going to be Gonzaga's opponent here in the Sweet 16 after looking pretty decent against Notre Dame after both teams had tough first-round games.
Yeah, this could be a challenge for the Zags, but I think the key is the Zags' defense stopping the West Virginia, therefore not allowing to throw on the press. So I think even though it's going to be a tight game, I do like the Zags to come through that. In the battle of the former and current Xavier coaches that we will bring in earlier. I unfortunately think Xavier's run my night here, but.
Let me go here. I mean, these are the last two games here we have down at the bottom that happened. Let's see here. Stalika, you know what? I think we're out of time, actually. So we'll just...
All right, well...
let's do it. Stalika, let me start with your team, the Xavier Musketeers. You told us last week that you thought they matched up really well with Maryland, and you were 100% correct. In fact, I picked Xavier not only to win that game, I picked them right here in my bracket, one of the few things I got right. But what did they do to Florida State?
I think they must have heard our podcast and heard that Leonard Hamilton was still coaching the Seminoles. I mean, Florida State actually got out to an early lead, looked like they might be hitting from outside the arc, but Xavier had packed it in, practically dared the Seminoles to shoot from outside, and they weren't able to maintain their pace, and they were actually getting some very good play from their bench, namely Sean O'Mara, who had been kind of running hot and cold during the year, but he and Kaiser Gates were red hot for both games against Maryland and Florida State.
Well, Tytel, let me throw this over to you now. I'll admit it, I pictured your Wildcats to be an upset loser in the second round to St. Mary's, but they got by them. Not blew them away, but they look fairly solid in the game.
It depends which half you watch. I was watching the first half at the bar. We were down 10, and Raleigh Alkins just dislocated his finger, and I was searching for as much beer as I could drink because I was petrified. I've seen this team have too many early exits when they're such a high seed before, and then somehow it was getting to the free throw line, making a gazillion free throws, Trier is going scoreless in the first half and then making a lot of baskets in the second half. Team effort, maybe coaching. I like to think so, but I can't prove it. I was really worried, and then they got it done, and it was very good, obviously. I see a path now. Like, I know I'm a homer, but if Xavier was fully healthy, I'd be a lot more nervous. They're not, and that gives me hope, even though Alkins is hurt. And everybody wants the Gonzaga rematch. We're not looking past Xavier, but Gonzaga beat us this year without Trier, without Parker Jackson Cartwright. San Jose going to have a ton of alums and students and fans there cheering for us. I really see a path, and we don't have to deal with Villanova or Duke. Like, I'm getting overconfident, but I see a path that didn't exist a week ago.
I agree with you. I see a path right now for your Wildcats right to the national championship game, and that's where I see them going right now. I'm not certain they win that game, but let's not get too far. But, Stalika, I got to throw this back to you here. They took your coach, and now they're going to take your spot in the Elite Eight. Do you want to tell him why your team is going to beat his Wildcats?
I mean, I didn't realize that spot was ours to begin with.
I see Xavier. There's a blank line.
I mean, there's nothing that entitles Xavier to that spot now, is there? I mean,
you're conceding defeat then?
I'm not conceding defeat, but I do think it's going to be similar to the script that we saw in 2015 where Xavier was able to stay close for the first 35 minutes. I mean, they cannot have another scoring drought like they did in that game in Los Angeles a couple of years ago. I mean, hot shooting will only take you so far, as we saw in the first two games here.
David, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, Xavier, I think, can play with them if they play the way they did against Florida State, but I'm not expecting them to beat Arizona.
David, if Xavier played the way they played against Florida State, they may have a shot against the Golden State Warriors. Come on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Florida State didn't exactly crash the glass like they normally do or effectively run their offense, but how about Gonzaga? We mentioned how well St. Mary's played against Arizona. They had the lead. I know Arizona opened it up at the very, very end, but right in there. Gonzaga played St. Mary's three times this year and beat them by a lot all three times. I realize that they kind of skated against Northwestern, but they just sprinted out to a big lead early. I think Gonzaga, although they don't always do it, has a gear that they can kick it into that's way, way, way above a lot of other teams. I think Gonzaga has a path to the Final Four.
Well, let me ask you this, David. Is Gonzaga your pick out of this region then?
Gonzaga is my pick out of this region.
And do you have a best game also?
The Northwestern Vandy game.
I agree with you on the Northwestern Vandy. I'm going with Arizona over the. Oh, I'm not going with Arizona over West Virginia in this championship game. I just think this is the same thing with Gonzaga. We see every year, and they're going to go ahead and lose in the Sweet 16. Matt, your thoughts on who's coming out of this region?
I've been with the Zags all along, sticking with them. And I actually think they got their monkey off their back a little bit. I think huge pressure in their first couple of games. They knew the expectations. They knew what happened last time they were a one seed. I think they got getting over that. And actually having to play a team like West Virginia where all you got to do is think about beating that pressure and that. I think they do that. They win that game by 8 or 10. I think Arizona gets by Xavier at a similar margin. And then I think Gonzaga takes Arizona one more time. And I picked the start of this tournament Gonzaga to win it all. And I'm sticking with it.
Do you agree with David that Northwestern Vandy game was the best one?
Yeah, I think that one. Also, I mean, ND Princeton, although that one, I think the final's a little bit deceiving. But still, well, Princeton had a shot to win it at the end.
Yeah, had Princeton hit the three at the end, it would have been the best game.
Tytel, your thoughts on who's coming out of this region and your best game?
I got to go with a little bear down. I must say I'm more worried about West Virginia than I am about Gonzaga just because of the press. I also want to make sure that we give Matt a ton of credit because it's one thing to say, like, you were on the Gonzaga bandwagon the whole year. He was. I remember very early on he was saying they were going to be a top seed and a top team, and I just thought he was crazy. So kudos, Matt, for getting it right because you did. I actually think Northwestern Vandy was the worst game because of the finish. I know it was a close game and exciting. I was at a bar with some coworkers. No sound, no closed captioning. And when the guy fouled him with 15 seconds left and the lead, I couldn't figure out why. My friends didn't seem concerned by it. I'm like, why did that happen? Like, what just happened? I mean, I don't know if it's Chris Webber calling a timeout to lose a championship, but I'm going to remember that play for a long time because it cost them a game.
Sleek, I don't think I've gotten your thoughts yet. I know that your best game was Xavier over Florida State, but let me ask you who's coming out of the region.
If you remember the scene Jaws where they were swapping stories and sharing their favorite scars, I think Xavier and Arizona are also going to be sharing their favorite horror stories about Wisconsin, but I think Arizona is going to come out victorious over Gonzaga. But if I had to go with my favorite game in the West region, I probably would take Notre Dame over Princeton, as odd as it sounds.
You're taking Xavier Florida State. We're already aside that one.
Yeah.
And if not, you're taking Xavier Maryland.
If not, you'll take Xavier Maryland. Let's ask one more question here. I know we took Final Four picks last week, and we already went through what teams we think are going to make the Final Four. But I wonder for each of you, who is your championship game and your champion now that we've down to the Sweet 16? I'm sticking with Kansas, obviously. I think they beat Arizona now in the finals. I'd previously had them over Duke. I mean, I'd always had them over Arizona. But David, who's your champion now and over who?
Let's see. I guess I would have okay, how would this play out? I've got Gonzaga, Wisconsin. Who are my other ones? Butler and who did I pick in the – oh, Butler. I think I picked North Carolina. Or no, I have – Butler in North Carolina.
Do you want me to do somebody else, David?
You go to someone else.
Pat, let me go to you with this question while David figures out who's even in this tournament.
So, yeah, I'll have Gonzaga over Baylor instead of Gonzaga over Nova. And then I will have Carolina over Purdue now. It's actually had Carolina over Louisville to start it. But I still had Gonzaga over Carolina to start. Sticking with it, Gonzaga's winning it all.
All right. Tytel, what about you?
I forget who I had to start because it's been a long week, but it's heart and head, but I think Arizona's coming out of the West. I have no idea who's coming out of the East because any of them could. I'll go with Wisconsin because my brother-in-law's a Badger, and because if we're on the Vengeance Tour anyway with Gonzaga, let's throw Wisconsin in there too. As far as the Midwest, I love the Michigan story and the Michigan team, but I saw Kansas and they look pretty freaking good, so I'll go with the Jayhawks. And in the South, it really could be any of the four. Like, none of them would surprise me. Maybe Butler a little. I'll go with Kentucky just because I think I had been on their bandwagon earlier and I like their team. So I'll go Arizona, Kentucky, Kansas, Wisconsin, In the title game, I'll go Kentucky over Arizona in a horrific switch of the 1997 title game when Arizona beat Kentucky in overtime for our only NCAA title.
All right, Stalico, what do you think? Who do you think your championship game is in the winter?
I think a pair of Pac-12 teams are going to be very poised to make the title game, and I think you know where I'm going with this. Arizona and UCLA. And
Cal didn't make the tournament.
It doesn't have a coach anymore.
Arizona, UCLA, who do you have winning it?
I think it's going to be UCLA in round four while Indiana is just waiting on a bended knee for Steve Alford to come home.
David, have you figured out who's in the tournament yet?
Yeah, I know they've had so many off-the-court issues, but they seem unaffected. I'm going to have Kansas over Gonzaga in the final.
Okay. Well, I guess let's go ahead and pull this down here then, and let me run through each of you. Do we have any other final thoughts as we head into the second to last week of the entire season here? By next week, we'll be down to a Final Four. Sleeka, let me start with you.
I mean, I know it's, I think we had said it earlier as far as this tournament being more chalky, but when you look at the West region, for example, I mean, Xavier earned the 11 seed because of their body of work, but they are certainly playing like a 3 seed right now. I mean, it's about a year later than we've expected, and we've got a shortened rotation, but I could see this tournament going either way, and same for the other 3 regions as well.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, I'd say, I think David brought up earlier, and I'm 100% with him. Even though the ACC crapped out of this tournament, they were still a really good league. Now, see that. I kind of thought the Big Ten was out, or the Big 12 was on their level all year long. I'll grant the Big 12 the best conference this year, but I think the ACC is still a clear number two. And how North Carolina might bail them out a little bit with a long run if they finish like I expect to win the time.
Well, I guess it kind of did, but that kind of raises the question of how do you judge the best conference? You judge at just the top of the league. I'd argue the Pac 12 is just as good, if not better, than the Big 12. If you judge it on the entire league, I got to go ACC over the Big 12. So I kind of bounces out the Big 12 number two overall. Just I don't know who to put them behind. But Tytel, any final thoughts?
Going back to the coaching news, Kevin Keats is going to be a star, I think, at NC State. I love guys who can win on the mid-major level and then take a bump up and get big-time program with budgets, and he can get top 50 recruits and everything. So I don't think they're going to make the Sweet 16 next year or anything, but I think it was a great hire, and I think he's going to stick around for a while and is going to be very successful for the Wolfpack.
David.
We kind of mentioned how this tournament has been a little bit chalky, although only one of the regions got all 4 protected seeds through to the Sweet 16. While watching the games, we were watching it kind of in a group, and we had all the TVs up, and someone asked the question, and to be fair, this person, the tournament attracts people that normally don't follow basketball all throughout the year, and that's one of the things that's great about it. But the question was, well, are you kind of surprised that there haven't been more upsets? And my thought was, well, an upset is a surprise. What you're asking me is, are you surprised that you're not surprised? No, I wasn't. Like, upsets, generally, although there weren't any buzzer beaters or overtime games, generally you only get 2 or 3 of those in the first round anyway. And I think despite that, the games have been very well played, very competitive. Vermont and Purdue did not come down to the buzzer, but it was fun to see Vermont compete. I know Kent or UCLA ran away from Kent, but for 30 minutes, Kent was right in there. And your typical 4-13, 3-14, under-the-radar team, that's about what you see. They stay in there. They stay in there for maybe 30 minutes, 35, and sometimes they get over the top and pull the upset. But more often than not, they don't. I thought that despite it being chalky and despite no buzzer beaters, I still think it's been a great tournament.
And I would agree with you there. I think that the second round was not nearly as chalky, obviously, with teams like Duke and Villanova going down, Louisville going down, the way Florida State went down to Xavier. But the first round, we saw 6 lower seeded teams win. Which was the fewest since 2007, when only 5 lower seed teams won in the first round. but even the ones that won were not that big of a surprise to me. Even Middle Tennessee was a favorite over Minnesota. Wichita State was a favorite over Dayton. Even Rhode Island, not big surprise because Creighton was so undermanned. I think there was only one true surprise in the first round, and that was USC knocking off SMU. That one just completely shocked me. Other than that, I think it was one of the chalkiest first rounds I've ever seen, especially if you looked at who who the favorite was with each game. The second round completely turned things around, and I think we're going to have an amazing next couple of rounds as well, especially that South region with North Carolina, Butler, UCLA, and Kentucky. But I guess on that note, I do want to thank everybody for joining us tonight. And I guess on behalf of our battling foes down there at the bottom between Xavier in Arizona, as well as Matt Sikowski and David Griggs up here, I'm Chad Sherwood, and we'll talk to you again real soon.